Hello, and welcome to Page Turn, the Largo Public Library podcast. I'm your host, Hannah. Page Turn is a monthly podcast bringing you information about great books, library news, and fun library tidbits from your favorite programs, as well as a Spanish language book review from Victor. But as always, we start with Reader's Advisory. When Wayatu Moore turns 5 years old, her father and grandmother throw her a big birthday party at their home in Monrovia, Liberia. But all she can think about is how much she misses her mother, who is working and studying in faraway New York. Before she gets the reunion her father promised her, war breaks out in Liberia. The family is forced to flee their home on foot, walking and hiding for 3 weeks until they arrive in the village of Lai. Finally, a rebel soldier smuggles them across the border to Sierra Leone, reuniting the family and setting them off on yet another journey, this time to the United States. Spanning this harrowing journey in Moore's early childhood, her years adjusting to life in Texas as a Black woman and an immigrant, and her eventual return to Liberia. The Dragons, the Giant, the Woman is a deeply moving story of the search for home in the midst of upheaval. Moore has a novelist's eye for suspense and emotional depth, and this unforgettable memoir is full of an imaginative, lyrical flights and lush prose. In capturing both the hazy magic and the stark realities of what is becoming an increasingly pervasive experience, Moore shines a light on the great political and personal forces that continue to affect many migrants around the world, and calls us all to acknowledge the tenacious power of love and family. Today's Reader's Advisory is The Dragons, the Giant, the Women by Wayatu Moore. The Dragons, the Giant, the Women is a memoir dealing with the struggles of war and immigration. The writing is lyrical and nonlinear. This memoir also deals with racial tensions in America and with the African diaspora. Readers may also enjoy Black Sunday by Tola Rotimi Abraham. Twin sisters Bibike and Ariyike are enjoying a relatively comfortable life in Lagos in 1996. Then, their mother loses her job due to political strife, and the family, facing poverty, becomes drawn into the new church, an institute led by a charismatic pastor who is not shy about worshiping earthly wealth. Soon, Bibike and Ariyike's father wagers the family home on a sure bet that evaporates like smoke. As their parents' marriage collapses in the aftermath of this gamble, the twin sisters and their two younger siblings, Andrew and Peter, are thrust into the reluctant care of their traditional Yoruba grandmother. Inseparable while they had their parents to care for them, the twins' paths diverge once the household shatters. Each girl is left to locate, guard, and hone her own fragile source of power. Written with astonishing intimacy and wry attention to the fickleness of fate, Tola Rotimi Abraham's Black Sunday takes us into the chaotic heart of family life, tracing a line from the euphoria of kinship to the devastation of estrangement. In the process, it joyfully tells a tale of grace and connection in the midst of daily oppression and the constant incursions of an unremitting patriarchy. This is a novel about two young women slowly finding, over 20 years, in a place rife with hypocrisy, but also endless life and love, their own distinct methods of resistance and path to independence. Or The Best We Could Do by Tai Bui. This illustrated memoir is about the search for a better future and a longing for the past, exploring the anguish of immigration and the lasting effects that displacement has on a child and her family. Bui documents the story of her family's daring escape from the fall of South Vietnam in the 1970s, and the difficulties they faced building new lives for themselves. At the heart of Bui's story is a universal struggle. While adjusting to life as a first-time mother, she ultimately discovers what it means to be a parent, the endless sacrifices, the unnoticed gestures, and the depths of unspoken love. Despite how impossible it seems to take on the simultaneous roles of both parent and child, Bui pushes through. Or A Drop of Midnight by Jason Diakite. Born to interracial American parents in Sweden, Jason Diakite grew up between worlds, part Swedish, American, Black, White, Cherokee, Slavic, and German, riding a delicate cultural and racial divide. It was a no-man's land that left him in constant search of self. Even after his hip-hop career took off, Jason fought to unify a complex system of family roots that branched across continents, ethnicities, classes, colors, and eras to find a sense of belonging. In A Drop of Midnight, Jason draws on conversations with his parents, personal experiences, long-lost letters, and pilgrimages to South Carolina and New York to paint a vivid picture of race, discrimination, family, and ambition. His ancestors' origins as slaves in the antebellum South, his parents' struggles as an interracial couple, and his own world-expanding connection to hip-hop helped him fashion a strong Black identity in Sweden. What unfolds in Jason's remarkable voyage of discovery is a complex and unflinching look at not only his own history, but also that of generations affected by the trauma of the African diaspora, then and now. Bonus segment. My personal favorite Goodreads list, The Dragons, The Giant, The Women is On, is Profiles in Silhouette. Happy reading, everyone. Today's library tidbit is about hurricanes, more specifically, why they move along the path they do. Hey, remember in August when we had two storms in the Gulf at the same time? Why did Marcos and Laura hit roughly the same location when they formed in completely different geographic places? When I started the research for this tidbit, I started with a book on the Gulf Stream. I assumed, because hurricanes roughly follow the North American ocean currents, that those currents influenced hurricanes. Turns out, both of them are actually influenced by global winds, and it's because of the global winds that the Gulf Stream and hurricanes follow roughly the same path. This is a bit of gross simplification for a very complicated science. I felt it important to mention this, though, because so many times we go into a situation believing we already know the answer. It's important to be open-minded to changing what you think is the correct answer when the facts point to a different conclusion, rather than denying the facts and refusing to learn. For other weather phenomenon, I might start out with the definition of what it even is, but we're Floridians, we sort of know hurricanes. However, for any people new to Florida, or any out-of-town listening, a hurricane is a rapidly rotating storm system characterized by low pressure, strong winds, and rotating storms. Hurricanes are what we call these storms in the North Atlantic Ocean and the Northeast Pacific Ocean. This same type of storm is called a typhoon in the Northwest Pacific Ocean and a cyclone in the South Pacific and Indian Oceans. Hurricanes in the Gulf Stream move along patterns created by global winds. Wind, in general, happens because of the uneven heating of the Earth's surface by the sun. Hot air rises and cold air sinks. Through convection, this causes the atmosphere to move, creating wind. Wind moves from the equator to the poles as it heats and then flows back to the equator as it cools. Now here is where things get a little confusing. Because the planet rotates, the air at the equator moves faster than the air at the poles. This means that, in the northern hemisphere, as Earth moves from the equator towards the poles, it ends up slightly to the east of the location it began at. This is called the Coriolis effect. This is why hurricanes rotate. Storms rotate counterclockwise in the northern hemisphere, and clockwise in the southern hemisphere because of this effect. The Coriolis effect also causes global winds to move in a large rotation. The interaction of the equatorial winds and the polar winds causes cells to form. The cell nearest to the equator from about 0 to 30 degree latitude is called the Hadley cell. This is the cell where hurricanes form and where the Gulf Stream begins. This cell also creates the trade winds. As the air at the equator heats and rises to the tropopause, which is the boundary between the troposphere and the stratosphere, it hits this place where air is no longer buoyant, and the air rising below it pushes it northward and southward towards the poles. As it moves towards the poles, it cools and sinks again, As it gets closer to the surface, a frictional return flow pulls the air back toward the equator to rise again. The Coriolis effect explains why air moving towards the North Pole moves easterly and why the air coming back down from the North Pole to the equator moves westerly. This circulation is what causes the North Atlantic Gyre, which is bordered on the west by the north-moving Gulf Stream and on the east by the Canary Current, which moves south. At the heart of the current is the Sargasso Sea, which, fun fact, is where freshwater eels from both North America and Europe mate, but not to each other. Hurricanes form the same way as the winds that form the Hadley Cell. Hot air along the equator rises, causing an area of low pressure beneath it. Air from around flows into the new low pressure area. This air warms and also rises. This convection cycle causes the spin characteristic of a tropical storm or hurricane. The more the storm is fed by the hot air flowing, the stronger the storm grows and the faster it rotates. The rotation causes an eye to form. The eye of the storm is an area of low pressure. Air that is being displaced by air moving up beneath it actually starts to flow back down through the eye. Hurricanes move predominantly westward off the coast of Africa because the trade winds along the equator move consistently westward. As the storms move, however, the Coriolis effect takes into effect and the storms begin to move more and more northward and eventually eastward. Of course, if it moves above 30 degree latitude, the storms can move again westward as it reaches a new convection atmospheric cell. This is why you'll get storms that occasionally will come back in and hit the Carolinas or farther north. The other reason hurricanes move westward for a long while after coming off the coast of Africa is because there is an almost permanent high pressure system in the middle of the Atlantic. This area of high pressure in the Atlantic, called a few things, but mostly the Bermuda Azores High or the Azores High, exists in the center of the North Atlantic Gyre, roughly in the same place as the Sargasso Sea. This high pressure area is why you see storm systems head due west straight off of Africa. Hurricanes move along paths of low pressure and are blocked by areas of high pressure. I cannot tell you why. I tried so hard to figure this out or even to just find a source that told me why, even if I didn't understand it. And I failed. I can tell you that it does, but why does high pressure block hurricanes? Can't tell ya. If there are any meteorologists listening, please tell me why. The interaction between hurricanes and high pressure systems are why Marcos and Laura came to land in almost the same location. At the time they were forming and traveling, there was a band of high pressure that was moving across Texas eastward, and also a high pressure system over Florida. This squeezed the two storms into the North Gulf area. When I sat down to write this tidbit, I assumed, like a lot of other tidbits I'd written, that while I may not fully understand the science I was about to synthesize, I would at least be able to find it. So many sources commonly available at hurricanes will tell you what happens, but almost never why it happens. Coworkers can attest that the entire time I was researching for this tidbit, I kept coming up to them and asking, "But why?" I would encourage you, if you also have that impulse, "But why?" about of science, to keep doing research into it. I only had a small window in which to research and write up this tidbit. But if some area of study catches your fancy, I encourage you to keep doing research, and keep learning, and keep looking. And now it's time for Book Traveler, with Victor.
Bienvenidos a una nueva edición de Viajero de Libros. Mi nombre es Víctor y soy bibliotecario en la Biblioteca Pública de Largo. Hoy les voy a hablar sobre un libro que tenemos en la colección en español que se titula Un Hombre de Verdad por Thomas Page McBee. La sinopsis. Thomas Page McBee fue el primer boxeador transgénero en combatir en Madison Square Garden. Pero este libro no va de eso. McBee nació con cuerpo de mujer, siempre supo que era hombre. Se operó a los 30 años y entendió que el mundo no volvería a ser igual. Porque cambiar de género lo cambiaría todo. Y de eso sí se trata este libro. Un hombre de verdad es el relato en primerísima persona de esa transición. un testimonio lírico sobre qué significa ser hombre en el mundo actual. Cuando McBee decidió inscribirse en un gimnasio de boxeo para entender la masculinidad a partir de la violencia, se reconoció como un amateur ante ese deporte y ante las preguntas más elementales sobre su propia identidad. La historia de McBee puede leerse como un reportaje intimista sobre el acoso, el miedo, el rechazo y la aceptación, pero sobre todo como una defensa de la fragilidad frente a los estereotipos omnipresentes del machito disfrazado, con la certeza de que dentro y fuera del ring esta lucha es una sola, la suya, la tuya, la nuestra. Mi opinión. El libro presenta varios ensayos de la vida de Thomas Page McBee, su experiencia como hombre transgénero, la homofobia, el sexismo y la violencia de género. Desde muy temprana edad, Thomas sabía que era un hombre. En su infancia lo educaron para temer los hombres en callejones oscuros, en las puertas de los bares o en cualquier lugar donde se encuentre con un hombre a solas. Siempre asoció la masculinidad con poder y violencia. Nunca se le ocurrió que existiera otra alternativa, que alguien no lo educaran para tener ese tipo de inseguridades. Thomas se apuntó a un gimnasio donde empezó su práctica de boxeo. Fue ahí donde él conoció lo que era la masculinidad y cuándo les condicionaba. Le dijeron que la debilidad y el miedo son rasgos impropios de los hombres porque son rasgos, entre comillas, de mujeres y homosexuales. En el ring de boxeo, todos los hombres luchan por demostrar que son hombres de verdad, no solo él. Deberían mantenerse firmes, fuertes y libres de vulnerabilidades. Pero Thomas libraba otro tipo de combate contra los estereotipos cuando ocultaba su identidad como hombre transgénero. Thomas Page fue consciente del sexismo que existe en la sociedad cuando lo encontró en sus propios comportamientos. Poco a poco, fue dando mayor importancia a las conversaciones con otros hombres. Él se dio cuenta de lo mucho que se tenía que esforzar las mujeres para encajar y hasta entrenar más duro que ningún hombre para ser respetada como cualquiera de ellos. La realidad estaba frente a él y tenía que trabajar en sí mismo para no caer víctima de la masculinidad tóxica. Esta historia refleja cómo Thomas Page se convirtió en la mejor versión de sí mismo, dejando atrás la noción de género, cuestionando la masculinidad y poniendo énfasis en la conexión entre personas. Es un libro muy recomendado y es todo por hoy. Hasta la próxima edición de Viajero de Libros. Hasta luego.
Thanks, Victor, for another great book review. Remember, if you happen to not know Spanish, check out the English language translation in the show notes. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We hope you're staying safe out there. Keep your masks on when you come into the library and check out our virtual programs. Have a great month, everyone, and we hope to talk to you again soon. Probably wrong. Hold on. Yeah, I had that very wrong. Okay, here we go.